I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
So back in October of 2014, a time capsule was removed from a lion statue that normally is on top of the old state house in Boston, Massachusetts. The statue had been taken off of the roof for restoration, and while they were at it, restorers decided to check on rumors that there was a time capsule in its head. This is something that had been completely unknown until a couple years before, and they wanted to see if it was really there. It was. They used a fiber optic camera to make sure that it was really there, and then they very carefully removed it. And during a private opening, archivists lifted the lid and immediately realized that what was in there was just packed way too tightly to be taken out safely in the studio where the statue was being restored. So they took the time capsule to the Bostonian Society's Archive Center, where they could really take their time removing the contents in a more controlled environment. Holly, do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
Right, because when we put this story on our Facebook, people got so mad.
They really did. There were some very, immediate response sort of anger notes.
Yeah. So this time capsule had been inside the statue for 113 years, but people felt like that was not nearly long enough for it to be opened. And then other people interpreted this decision to take the box somewhere more controlled to do the actual unpacking. They thought this was a sign that incompetent amateurs had been trusted with this delicate task, which was absolutely not true. It was somebody with a master of library science and archives management. Like, the people also argued that they should have just had the whole statue removed somewhere safer, or that there was a lot of question about why the time capsule needed to be removed in the first place. A lot of people wanted it and its contents to go back where it was. So then, another time capsule was removed from the old state house a couple of months later, and this one dated back to 1795, and it had been put behind the cornerstone by Paul Revere, then governor of Massachusetts Sam Adams, and Colonel William Scully. And so based on what had happened with that first time capsule, we were really careful about what details we included when we put it up on our Facebook. We noted that it had been taken out as part of a repair to a water leak behind the cornerstone, And we specified that professional conservators had removed it and that it was going to be x-rayed and opened under controlled conditions and that it was going to be put back after its contents had been displayed for the public for a while. Holly, do you also remember this?
Yes.
Because people were still so mad.
They were. There's a fascinating reaction, I think, that people have with time capsules. And I couldn't break down the psychology of it because it varies a lot. But there were definitely some angry responses.
Yeah, people were still really mad. This time they were mad that the time capsule was going to be put back, which was what people had wanted to happen with the other time capsules. So at this point, I kind of never wanted to mention time capsules in the context of the show again. Which is one of the reasons why neither time capsule was in the Unearthed in 2014 episodes. But then, this April, I got the chance to actually see the contents of that cornerstone time capsule while they were on display at the Museum of Fine Arts Boston. And there was literally a line all the way around the room to see it. It stretched way out into adjoining galleries. It was just to look in this little display case that was full of coins and newspapers. Part of this is because the time capsule was really small, so there was a little display case people were waiting to see into. But part of it is because people apparently care a whole lot about time capsules.
Yeah, and I feel compelled to mention that this sort of interesting discussion that sometimes got a little heated on our Facebook page, that is not the only place that these were happening. If you looked at news sites that were posting about it, their comment sections were having very similar things play out.
Yeah, there was just angriness everywhere. So, we're going to talk about time capsules today. Maybe explore some of the reasons people get so excited about them.
Yes. And the tradition of burying stuff really goes back almost to the beginning of human history. The most obvious example is that most of the world's cultures have at some point buried artifacts, letters, trinkets, and other objects as parts of funeral rituals.
People have also been deliberately placing objects into building foundations and cornerstones for thousands of years. For example, in Mesopotamia, a common practice was to bury objects in building foundations for the purpose of sanctifying the space and protecting it, or maybe to commemorate something that was related to the building or its builders or where it was being built. This practice has continued throughout the ages and all over the world, and it has also included embedding items of religious significance in church cornerstones.
And the idea that these deposits might one day be discovered again has also cropped up at various times throughout history. For example, around the 7th century BCE, Assyrian king Esarhaddon had relics and clay tablets put in the foundations of monuments, saying that he, quote, deposited them in the foundations and left them for future times.
But all of these burials of stuff are a little different from the idea of a time capsule. Although people of the past did sometimes think or write about how future generations might someday stumble upon their funerary deposits and their foundational deposits, which are what those things are called, that was really secondary to their purpose. They were being buried for some other reason, and the idea that somebody might come dig them up later was secondary to that.
But in a time capsule, on the other hand, people intentionally gather and store objects with the specific plan that someone else is going to open them later. And usually there's a specified time frame for what later means. And for time capsule purists, it's only a true time capsule if there's a specific end date for the thing to be opened again. This means that while a letter from a 6-year-old to his or her future self to be opened 10 years later is a time capsule, according to this definition, but a giant room of artifacts to be opened at some undetermined time in the future technically isn't. Neither are time capsules that include those same sorts of things but are shot into space to be one day opened by aliens, maybe. So basically, the end date is really like the definer of what is and isn't a time capsule.
Another aspect of time capsules is that they're preserving usually a snapshot of everyday life when they were sealed. And while there are definitely time capsules that have a much grander scope than that, they almost always also include things like coins, newspapers, photographs, letters from notable people, and everyday items that are kind of meant to give future generations a glimpse of what life used to be like. This including of everyday life snapshots is also why accidental preservations of everyday life, like, say, the ruins of Pompeii, are sometimes described as time capsules.
And although there are time capsules buried all over the world, the practice is largely a tradition that came from and flourished in the United States. And there are a couple of reasons for this. A big one is that the first most famous examples of time capsules, which we're going to talk about in just a bit, were all developed in the United States.
But sociologists and psychologists also theorize that another reason that the United States has been so intent on encapsulating history to send it to the future is that as a nation, the history of the United States is pretty short. There were definitely people in North America long before the United States was a thing, but European presence in North America only goes back a few hundred years. So the theory goes that people kind of subconsciously want to instantly create something that counts as history in the eyes of future generations.
And we're going to talk about some specific examples of time capsules after we have a brief word from a sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to talk about the first true time capsule to start off with. And the first time we know of that people sealed things away with the specific intent that they would be brought out again at a particular date in the future was for the Centennial Exhibition in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And that took place in 1876. It had a century safe that was meant to be opened in 1976. There might be earlier examples of time capsules out there that, in addition to having been buried or sealed away, also had a specified opening date. But this is the first one we actually have documentation of.
And the century safe looked just like a safe, but with a purple velvet lining, which is a detail I personally love. This safe contained photographs, a book on temperance, and signatures of visitors to the Centennial Exhibition, among other things. It was stored under the steps of the Pennsylvania State Capitol and opened in 1976 as intended. A new capsule buried in 1976 is to be opened in 2076.
Even though the century safe was the first true time capsule, the word time capsule had not been coined yet. That did not happen until 1938, leading up to the 1939 World's Fair. G. Edward Pendray, who was a public relations executive for Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing, gets the credit for coming up with the term. Also, for a while, because of the shape of what they were building, he thought about calling it a time bomb. And kind of glad that didn't take off. Before the word time capsule was coined, people normally called these sorts of things safes or boxes or similar generic terms.
Westinghouse was involved with all of this because it was constructing the physical container for the World's Fair time capsule, which was to stay underground until 6939, otherwise known as 5,000 years from its start date. Because these capsules were supposed to stay buried for so long, the containers had to be impervious to just about any kind of damage that you could think of. The end result was a 7.5 foot long, or 2.2 meter, torpedo-like tube made of a non-corrosive alloy with several interior layers meant to protect the contents.
These contents included cigarettes, men's and women's grooming tools, magazines, and samples of seeds and fabrics. There's also a 22,000-page microfilm essay, and there are letters from such figures as Albert Einstein and then-MIT President Carl T. Compton. There was huge, huge fanfare around the burying of this time capsule, and there's also a total replica of it and its contents at the George Westinghouse Museum.
Running concurrently with the creation of the first Westinghouse time capsule was the Crypt of Civilization, and I know a lot about this one. This is an incredibly huge and involved time capsule at Oglethorpe University, which is here in Atlanta and where I used to work. Oglethorpe President Thornwell Jacobs led this project, which is an attempt to document all of human history. The idea is that future archaeologists could just consult the material from this vault instead of having to painstakingly recreate an idea of how the world worked by piecing together information from lots of different dig sites.
The Crypt of Civilization today is on a lower level of the administration building at Oglethorpe. And in addition to all the physical items which are inside, which are a lot, the thing is enormous, it contains more than 600,000 pages of microfilm, which document all sorts of historical information. So this crypt was sealed on May 25th, 1940, and it's not supposed to be opened again until the year 8113. And this is 6,177 years from when it was sealed up. The idea is that as of 1940, there were 6,177 years of recorded history. So this crypt acts as like a midpoint between the beginnings of recorded history and 6,177 years in the future, when people can just open this thing up to find out all about the past.
Yeah. And it's just a big door, a big metal door that you walk by when you're in the admin building. And it has engraving on it, but it's just the door that's there that never opens. Because people were inspired by the first Westinghouse time capsule and Oglethorpe's Crypt of Civilization, the time capsule heyday really spanned from 1935 to 1982. Because of the Centennial Exhibition, 100 years became a popular time limit for time capsules to remain sealed.
There are also some connections between that first Westinghouse time capsule and the crypt at Oglethorpe. So G. Edward Pendray had actually called for public support of the crypt project as it was being developed. And conversely, one of the letters inside the first Westinghouse time capsule is a letter from then Oglethorpe president Thornwell Jacobs. So that, like, there was a lot of crossover between those two projects, which I think is pretty cool. We're also now going to just talk about some other notable examples of time capsules, and this is not at all an exhaustive list, not even of the ones that are really big and impressive. Westinghouse created a second time capsule for the 1968 New York World's Fair, and it's almost like an update to the first one. It's the exact same size and shape, and it's buried about 10 feet away, but its contents include things that didn't exist when the previous time capsule had been put into the ground. This includes birth control pills, an artificial heart valve, credit cards, information about atomic energy, and other more modern, as of 1968, stuff. Both the first Westinghouse time capsule and the second one are supposed to be opened in 6939 together. So that second one is sort of like a supplement to the first one rather than a whole separate thing with a separate opening date.
Two identical time capsules were made for Expo 70 in Osaka, Japan. And one of these is to stay sealed for 5,000 years, and the other is intended to be opened every 100 years after an initial opening in the year 2000. And one reason for this plan is to check in and make sure everything's okay, but the other is to update the time capsule's contents, so it kind of becomes an ongoing living archive record. And these time capsules are shaped like kettles, and filled, they weigh 2.12 metric tons. And although their purpose was to detail in a very broad cross-section life in 1970, which means that they include lots and lots of everyday items, there's also historical information, including leaflets, films, and other recordings, including artifacts from the bombing of Hiroshima. And you can actually see the total contents of all these things online. They are available, and there is so much stuff jammed into them.
Yeah, I had this moment where I was flummoxed because I stumbled across this thing that had, you know, a comprehensive list of everything that's in there, and there are pictures of a lot of it. And I am used to when you see older pictures of things that were taken with earlier digital cameras, they look kind of terrible. And I had this moment where I just forgot that there were film cameras in 1970. You can scan pictures from 1970 or film from 1970. Like, that still exists. It didn't go away. So I had this just moment that I feel silly confessing, but I still want to confess, where I was like, wow, where'd they get all these pictures from? Oh, right, cameras. They were still a thing, Tracy. It had been a long day. There is a 100-year time capsule that was created in Juneau, Alaska in 1994. And this one is huge because it was created using thousands of items that were collected from Juneau residents. It's housed in a converted lobby of a government building, and you can see some of the contents through two windows that go to the outside. It's also lit with electric lights that can be changed from the outside, so it can be lit while still being totally sealed up.
That's a pretty cool feature. There's a 40th anniversary time castle that was buried in Disneyland in Anaheim, California on July 17th of 1995, and that is to be opened on that same date in the year 2035. Here's hoping I'm there for that.
Yeah, I was like, is Holly going to go? It does look like a castle, which is why it is called that. Really, 100 years is a pretty standard time for a time capsule now. And then we have these really fascinating millennial ones that go on for 1,000 years and beyond. But when the internet took off and things started changing at a super rapid pace, MIT made a time capsule of the online world circa 1999 at the Sloan School of Management. And that one was to be opened after 5 years because the internet was evolving so rapidly.
Aside from those that we've just mentioned, all over the world, there are boxes of documents, coins, and household items just waiting to be dug up. And we'll talk about what can go wrong on that front after we have another quick word from a sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the sad truth is, as much as people like the idea of burying things for posterity, a lot of time capsules just fail. In some cases, they haven't even made it to their burial or their sealing. There was a time capsule made for the U.S. Bicentennial that went on a national tour with signatures from all over the country that were supposed to be collected and put inside. And it made it through that whole tour, but then was stolen from the truck at the burial site before it could actually be buried.
Capsules and their contents have also been lost thanks to leaks, demolitions, and people just forgetting that they were buried in the first place or that they existed at all. So in addition to trying to preserve all of human history up to 1940 in the Crypt of Civilization, Oglethorpe is also trying to keep track of all those time capsules so that nothing else gets lost, and that's via the International Time Capsule Society, which was established in 1990.
Yeah, one of the reasons that they really wanted to get that time capsule out of the lion's head statue was because they did not really know how it had been packaged and whether everything in there had already been destroyed because of water, which it hadn't, which was great. But there's also the fact that a lot of times what's inside a typical time capsule turns out to be really underwhelming once it's opened. The very nature of time capsules means that a lot of times they're full of newspapers and coins and photographs, letters from people who were famous 100 years ago, but nobody knows who they are now, and basically obsolete junk. There's even a 1999 article in The Onion titled "Newly Unearthed Time Capsule Just Full of Useless Old Crap," which made fun of both people's responses to what you usually find when you open a time capsule, and the types of things that people select to put in there. Like, there's several layers of humor going on. This is actually kind of funny to me, how often people open a time capsule and, like, no one is impressed with what was inside because it's just newspapers and coins. And yet, when the time capsule was made, there were knockdown, drag-out fights about what to put inside of there.
Oh, yeah.
People are as angry about what to put in time capsules as they were with all of our Facebook posts about taking them out.
Because they want to make sure the exact correct picture of that time period is created with the contents. But even if people didn't find their contents boring, more often than not, the same objects placed inside time capsules are also preserved better at museums and other archives. It's very rare that someone opens a time capsule to discover something that's actually a unique find.
Yeah, usually you can see a better preserved one of the exact same thing in one or many museums. However, all of that said, time capsules usually inspire an interest in history and some civic pride, at least in the short term. And that counts when they're created and again when they're opened. And especially for the ones that are meant to stay sealed up for thousands of years, the containers themselves can involve tremendous feats of engineering. This has especially been true for all of these ones that are supposed to stay sealed up for many thousands of years. So while people might classify their contents into the category of worthless junk, their creation has a different type of worth.
And back to those time capsules that we talked about at the very beginning of the show. The lion statue is back on top of the old state house, complete with a new time capsule. And this time, it's in the lion's scroll, so future generations will have easier access to it. Among the contents of that capsule are an iPhone 5. Apple apparently would not provide an iPhone 6 for this. Foreign Relations of the United States, 1977 to 1980, Volume 3, to replace a copy of Foreign Relations of the United States, 1896, that was in the prior box, basically to fill space, a number of letters and photos, and a Boston Marathon medal. The original items were on display at the old State House for several weeks over December 2014 and into January 2015. The items inside were delicate enough that after that point, they were returned to the archives for preservation.
Yeah, they were actually preserved incredibly well, considering how old the time capsule was and how it had just been in the statue out in the elements for so long. But they did want to make sure that they lasted long into the future, so they didn't stay on public display for all that long. The time capsule that was removed from the cornerstone at the old state house is also going to go back in June, and it's going to include its original contents, having been cleaned and restored, along with some new items along in the same vein. Basically, what was in there before were newspapers and coins, so things of that nature. Its original contents were displayed at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston during March and April of 2015.
The Bostonian Society and the Museum of Fine Arts also both documented what was inside those boxes and put lots of pictures and details on their websites.
Yeah, so people felt like they were being hidden away from public view. They really, really weren't.
Tracy!
Yeah?
Do you now have a little bit of listener mail for us?
I do have a little bit of listener mail. Before I do that, I have a correction.
Okay.
And it is a correction to our Louisa May Alcott episode, in which in one sentence we say that she got typhoid, and in another sentence we say that she got typhus. And we know those are two different diseases and have even talked about those being two different diseases on the show, yet I messed it up in my note-taking. She had typhoid.
I didn't catch it either, so some days are better than others.
You didn't, and I didn't, and our producer Noel didn't. No one caught it. It's a thing that happens sometimes. So I apologize for that error. Our listener mail is from Katie, and Katie says, "Dear Tracy and Holly, I love your podcast, and I was so excited to hear the episode about the history of special education. As a moderate to severe disabilities special education teacher, as well as an instructor for college-level special education courses, it was very exciting to have you share this information with your listeners. Like in other civil rights movements, our country has come a long way in improving the treatment of individuals with disabilities. One part of the history of special education that you did not talk about is standardized assessment. With no child left behind, we must administer a state assessment to all children, regardless of disability. This includes children that have the most severe disabilities. Like other standardized assessments, these are created by the state that administers them. While this sounds like a step in the right direction, often these alternate assessments are not a valid measure of student learning for low-incidence students. Many of them involve using Common Core standards and are presented at a level that most of the students taking it cannot access. At the end of your podcast, you made a comment that even though special education teachers have good intentions, often it's difficult to get IEPs written and implemented. For many of us that teach students with moderate to severe disabilities, the assessment plays a large role in this struggle. The assessments often have a portfolio component of some sort that require the teacher to create and implement work samples and probes for the assessments. This is very time-consuming and often takes away from the time that we have to work with the students on functional skills and interact with them at their level. There are a few initiatives in the U.S. that are working on creating an assessment that would be a more valid measure of student growth for MSD students. These initiatives are still several years from being completed, and it will be up to the states to adopt them." And then she goes on to suggest a topic for the future. So thank you, Katie, for writing in. This was actually my mom's experience with the children that she worked in with when she was working in residential care for children with multiple disabilities. She worked with a lot of children who, like, their IEP goals would not be about things like learning to read or write. They would be about things like learning to swallow independently or, like, learning to make eye contact with other people. So it was definitely a different world than what people usually think of as education. But those things all still counted as learning, but definitely would not be included on some kind of state assessment of their skills. So thank you, Katie. If you would like to write to us about this or any other topic, we are at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/MissedInHistory and on Twitter at MissedInHistory. Our Tumblr is at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're also on Pinterest at pinterest.com/MissedInHistory. We have a Spreadshirt store at missedinhistory.spreadshirt.com, full of phone cases and shirts and whatnot. If you would like to learn more about what we talked about today, you can come to our parent company's website, that is howstuffworks.com, put the word archaeology in the search bar, and you will learn about how we do most of our learning about the past when it comes to digging things up, which is more through archaeological study than through time capsules, which are often cool, but not often actually archaeologically notable. You can go to our website, which is missedinhistory.com, and you can find show notes and an archive of everything that we have ever done in terms of our episodes and lots of other cool stuff. So you can do all that and a whole lot more at howstuffworks.com or missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.